call on the ice stands. We gotta go.
Okay, fellas, we are set to go.
Let's roll, boys. Come on, let's get going.
We are kicking.
Here we go.
Both guys, 5 minutes each for fighting.
Watch the blue.
Play the puck.
We're not doing this.
Hey. After further review, it's the Scouting the Refs podcast.
Yeah, baby.
Here's your hosts, Todd Lewis and Josh Smith.
Okay, gentlemen, play ball. Let's go.
All right, guys, let's drop the puck.
Josh, I don't know what's going on. This week we had officials become injured because they've been hit by the puck, and I'm wondering if the league general managers have collectively taken a puck to the head with some of the rule suggestions that they've come up with.
Well, the officials are trying to get out of the way, but it seems like the general managers are getting in the way of what's happening on the ice based on what's come out of those meetings.
I am very puzzled as to some of the so-called recommendations that they have come up with. And we will get into that and a few other things as well on this week's edition of the Scouting the Refs podcast. Please, of course, make sure you're following us on the social channels. You will find Josh on X and Instagram at Scouting the Refs. You will find me on X and Instagram at Todd Lewis Sports. On this week's episode, Wilson Wax, refs are in play. Emergency backup linesman. Headshots get you a sit down for two games, nothing dangling out, and baffling rule tweaks. Does that cover it?
It does. Some of them, some were good. Some baffling.
Okay. absolutely. Yeah, I'm flummoxed about it. And we'll get into that. Let's talk about all the injury report, because normally it's miles long for teams and players, but it's miles long for the officials this week. And we had a weird one with Steve Barton, who was injured during the first period of the Carolina Hurricanes and Toronto Maple Leafs game. Now, normally they would continue with three officials, but in this case, there was a call to the bullpen.
Oh, man, I don't recall seeing this before. Now, we don't have standby officials in regular season games. There's nobody waiting in the wings. There's not somebody out there to take the ice. They go with three officials. In this case, though, the NHL was lucky, and Mark Šuček happened to be in attendance. Heard he was actually at the game as a fan with his family, watching the game. He sees Barton leave the ice and works his way down the officials' room to help out. By the next period, there he is on the ice, smiling, wearing Tyson Baker's number 88, because obviously he didn't have his gear with him, ready to get some work in.
Beg, borrow for skates and pads and everything else. And I wonder how this impacts the schedule in terms of, you know, referees and linesmen work a certain number of games every year. Does this totally flummox their schedule in terms of when he's going to be working next?
Well, he did work his regularly scheduled next game, which was in the Toronto area. So no impact there. It just happened to work out for him. I'm interested, though, because there are set numbers of games to be worked and dollars amounts for games worked in excess of what is required of a linesman. So he is picking up a little monetary bonus for taking the ice on that one.
Just like a little overtime. That's
exactly
all. That's nice. That's
pulling
nice.
In the OT.
So others on the injured list, Tommy Hughes, who absorbed a Steven Stamkos shot, and that smarts when you wear one of those.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Right in the back. Not where you want to take a shot in general, but especially when it's coming from a guy like Steven Stamkos, who can really let it rip. Unfortunate play. You know, you're lined up along the blue line there. You're watching the action and you're trying to give up a lane and you're right in the lane. Oh, man, it hurts watching it. It hurts looking at the expression on his face. Hughes stayed in the game. He finished out the other 7 minutes of the period, but had to leave the game after that. So no word on his injury. But, you know, again, you're where do you go? Do you give Stammer the glass and the boards there? Do you give Stammer up the ice? And I think if you've got guys coming in, you want to be able to give them the boards. In this case, he was giving up that lane. He was hugging the boards, and that's precisely where Stamkos was looking to put the puck.
Yeah, unfortunate for Tommy Hughes. Hopefully he does get back. And another one that was injured, similar kind of thing, is Dan Kelly, who also absorbed a shot, we'll say.
Yeah, man, poor
on
Dan Kelly here.
And Schneider, that shooting hit the linesman.
Yeah,
and that hurt.
That hurt him. He actually climbed over the boards, and now is in the Rangers bench.
Yeah,
as you can see, he took that right on the side of the foot or the side of the ankle.
Ooh, that is a rough one. Ouch.
Ouch. Good call to jump in the players' bench, though, and sort of recover, if you can, for a minute. Now, someone is going to suggest probably that the linesman station themselves on the bench so that they can call the lines from there.
Hey, Kelly's been there before. He was a Rangers farmhand. He'd played some preseason games with the Rangers, so not exactly unfamiliar surroundings for him to be on the bench.
So he's just saying hello to everyone is what you're saying.
hey to the old teammates, right?
All right. Another injury situation, this one involving referee Kevin Pollock. It looks like it might be serious, though, and that's unfortunate because Pollock looked like he was slated to retire at the end of the season, and they always do the nice final game where the referee gets to pick his crew, pick the location and stuff, and we're not sure that this is going to be able to happen for Kevin Pollock.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. It looks like what we're hearing is that it is a season-ending, a career-ending injury for Pollock, who was skated to hang them up. But unfortunately, at Sabres game back in February, just gets taken out along the boards there. Doesn't look like a major play, doesn't look like anything significant, but apparently suffered some damage to the right knee there in that collision. It's enough that with rehab, possible medical attention, not sure if surgery was on the table, but enough to, unfortunately, as Gord Miller reported, call an end to the career of Kevin Pollock. You know, plenty of games worked. Right now, he's the active leader in regular season games worked. He's second among active officials in playoff games worked. So he would have been out for the playoffs this year, as retiring officials always are. But, you know, he had a chance without this injury. He's moving his way up in those totals, pad his numbers a little bit. But, sad moment for Kevin Pollock to not be able to wrap up his career properly and have that nice send-off that we like to see around the league.
Yeah, hopefully they will have some sort of recognition for Kevin Pollock when he's feeling up to it. So that is not the end of the referee's involvement in the play. This one also from the Tampa-San Jose game. Victor Hedman is behind the San Jose Sharks net and appears as though he wants to send the pass around the boards out to the other side of the ice, but gets a very favorable bounce from referee Chris Schlenker. And Nick Paul says, thank you very much, and deposits it right in the back of the net. I don't think Schlenker is credited with an assist, but I don't think they minded it.
Oh, Tampa's definitely not complaining. You know, it's unfortunate. Someone actually joked that, Todd, earlier today. They said, are we tracking ref assists yet on the website?
He's a plus one.
Maybe for next year. But no, refs are in play. As you said in the open, the officials are considered part of the playing surface for the most part. So just like you can bank a puck off the boards, off the stanchion, off another player, or off the side of the net, a deflection off an official is a legal play. The puck is still in play and you can score the goal. The caveat being you cannot score a goal directly off an official. So had that puck deflected off of Schlenker, gone up, and even if it hits the back of the goalie and goes in, that's still considered directly off an official. So in that case, it would have been no goal. But right to Paul, who gloves it down, and he's smart with it. Not the same situation as when we saw Tim Peel get hit in the breadbasket, leading to a goal that was disallowed. This one stands.
All right. Shall we discuss some of the rule, tweaks, suggestions, recommendations, whatever you want to call them? You did mention that some of them were good ideas, and I can appreciate where they're coming from. I like the safety one, too, that they don't want players dangling legs over the boards anymore to prevent injury, because we have seen this happen. So this kind of thing, I think, is good for the general managers to recommend.
Absolutely. So that's one that actually is effective right away, that players can't keep their legs dangling over the bench. So if you want to sit on the bench for a line change, you got to keep your legs on the inside of the bench. You can't have them out. A minor change, but one that apparently has caused injuries in the past. We saw Shander Alfonso cut a few seasons back. Apparently in a Winnipeg game earlier this season, somebody was cut. So that one happens right away. That one's logical, makes sense. Like you said, the few other ones from a safety standpoint, if a goalie gets injured and has to leave or is pulled by concussion spotters, their backup gets a warm-up. Used to not be the case. So that makes sense to me. Some around face-off locations, if we have a stoppage, you can pick where the face-off is going to take place for the non-offending team. One of the interesting ones that doesn't happen too often, if players refuse to play the pucks, typically if it's off a high stick or hand pass, they blow the play dead. Now, if the team that refused to play the puck because they didn't want to get the whistle or they wanted to drag the play out a little bit, the face-off is going to be disadvantageous to them. So the non-offending team gets to push the face-off one zone towards the attacking side. So if it's in the neutral zone, you get an attacking zone face-off. Just more motivation to not refuse to play the puck. Those, I'm good with those. Those are logical. They're minor tweaks, nothing significant. I think, Todd, where the where the interesting part comes in is Rule 38 around the coaches' challenges.
Most specifically on two areas of coaches' challenges. So let's deal with them separately, and we'll start with the minor penalty for high sticking that is now going to be allow a coach's challenge in case of friendly fire. And we have seen this occasionally where a player is whistled for a penalty and you will see that it is their own stick or something else that causes the high stick to come up. It is not an offense against the opponent. The only way that they can overturn this now is if a coach challenges. And if a coach is wrong, it will be an additional minor penalty, so it will be a 5-on-3 situation. Now, double minors and major penalties, those are already reviewed. I don't understand why this one has to be a coach's challenge. The play's already stopped. Take a look at it and get the call right.
The play is stopped, like you said, for a double minor, for a major, for a match penalty. The officials will be reviewing it. For double minor, they have the option to take a look and confirm the call. They can disallow it. They can enforce the call. But that's all up to the officials on the ice. In this case, we're now putting it in the hands of the coaches to say, hey, do you think that was a good call? So this is the first time we're entertaining the idea of a coach being able to challenge a minor penalty. And boy, Todd, it feels like Pandora's box here, because if we can challenge this minor penalty, what's to say we can't challenge other minor penalties?
Well, yes, that may be part of the experiment that we're going to start with this and see how the challenge for penalties goes. But I feel that the league is really abdicating their responsibility here. It's like, look, we'll let you review double minors or major penalties, but we don't think it's worth reviewing minor penalties for high sticking. That doesn't make any sense to me. You're the ones in charge of officiating and getting the calls right. And that's what their mantra is we want to get the call right. You're not giving yourself all the tools to do that.
That's it. And that's the hard part, right? That's what we've seen since the coach's challenge went in for offside, for goaltender interference, is if we're going to allow reviews, we're going to want to get the call right. Coach's challenge here. Now we have a situation where the officials are leaving it up to the bench to decide if they're going to get the call right. The officials will get it right, or at least get that second look with the majors, the matches, the double minors. They get to make that call, but I'm not sure that I think the coaches are the best in making a rule determination and then deciding to challenge. So interesting, but not a big fan, and very punitive. As you mentioned, you fail. You've got the original penalty getting enforced and the delay of game penalty enforced on top of it. So you do end up with a 5-on-3, which you better be sure before you challenge this one.
I find this an extremely troubling decision that the general managers have made, and they've decided to move these forward to the competition committee. And we have seen minor penalties pulled off the board previously, where a trip has taken place or an elbow or something to that effect, and a player has been sent to the penalty box. And after a minute or two of, you know what, I'm not sure we got this one right, they have pulled players out of the penalty box and wiped the offense out. So I don't see that this is any different.
No, and that's happened, but by the letter of the law, when those situations happen, it's through discussions with the other on-ice officials. So the refs, the linesmen, they huddle, they talk about what happened on the play. Maybe someone had a better angle on it. Maybe somebody saw that the stick was lifted. That's how they've overturned those penalty calls in the past.
Sure they have.
They're only not discussion. Allowed. They're okay. Not allowed to look at the board. They're not allowed to look at a replay. It's only discussion. So even though the replay may be broadcast on huge 75-foot monitors above their heads and throughout the arena, purely discussion leads to those changes, Todd. Not a video review at all.
Okay. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Say no more. Okay. The other confusing one is involving a similar sort of coach's challenge, but this has to do with the dreaded puck over glass. If you didn't like the puck over glass rule before, you'll really hate it now, because they're adding a coach's challenge. And I don't know. I'm at a loss as to why this is happening.
If you hate the offside review and the puck over glass, we've combined them. So yeah, now it's the same boat. You can challenge a penalty for puck over glass to determine if the puck was deflected going out of play. Once more, Todd, to your point, this is the officials. We want to get the call right, but we're going to leave it up to the bench to decide if we should take a second look and if we should try to get the call right, which means we're accepting that we have a process that lets us have a review in place, but we might get the call wrong if the coach opts not to challenge the play because of the risk of getting an additional penalty. So let's build in a review. But once again, it's not up to the officials. It's not up to the situation room to decide if it's worth getting the call right. It's up to the bench.
And unlike the blue line or offside challenges, there are no specific cameras pointing yes. at different points of the glass to try to get a good view. Yet we still have chips in the pucks that tell you where the puck is, and maybe we could use some of that data at some point.
If the puck varies direction, and I saw a game the other day where they were using the puck tracking, and you could see the one shot go in, you could see it hit off the crossbar and go into the net. If they can see that at real time or near real time, then we know that the puck was deflected or changed direction. We should know that for puck over glass. The time it's going to take to spend evaluating this rule and talking about this rule, they should probably just build out the puck tracking technology to be able to determine, hey, that was a deflection or it wasn't. You know, have a little light go on for the linesman. Hey, puck's over glass. Oh, the blue light's on. That means it was deflected. No penalty. We move on. I feel like we're so close. It would be faster to do that than to build in this coach's challenge. Honestly, Todd, the coach's challenge itself would probably take just as long.
Right. This is exact. And again, the game is stopped because the puck has gone right. out of play, either by a penalty or by deflecting off the glass. Take 10 seconds and have a look at it. How quickly, when you're watching it on TV, do they roll in replays? It can happen very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think the coach's challenge is, if they're about getting it right, we want to make sure we're getting the calls right, and we want to limit it to certain things. Now that we're getting into the space of penalties, even puck over glass, which, hey, so many people are fans of abolishing this rule to begin with, treating it like an icing, getting rid of the penalty altogether. But no, we're building more around it, more delays, more challenges, more things to impact what it's like to watch or even to officiate a National Hockey League game.
Yeah, it seems like they've taken the most complicated route to try to enforce these rules, and I'm flummoxed by the whole thing. So let's get to a less controversial topic. Suspensions, because everyone agrees with how those are implemented. First on the list, Dmitry Kulikov, who got a match penalty for delivering a nasty headshot to Tampa Bay Lightning forward Connor Sheary. The penalty was also negated by a Panthers goal, and it was a strange set of circumstances that took place. So let's kind of walk through how this happened first before we get to the suspension part.
Yeah. So we're looking at a play in front of the net, and Kulikov's moving in. You'd think at this point you'd want to make a play on the puck to try to force a turnover, get control of the puck. He totally ignores the puck and shifts his focus onto Sheary, leans into the hit, and boom, just pops the melon right there. There's no question that this was an intentional hit to the head. He was targeting the head the whole way. I know targeting isn't necessarily part of the league rule, but it's something that they're considering. If I want to play player safety, we know that head contact was avoidable. He could have hit through the body. He could have made it a legal body check, but instead he picked the head with the shoulder there. And I think a well-deserved two games in line with what we've seen this season. We've had a handful. I think we've had about 10 suspensions for illegal checks to the head, most of them in the two game range, which are like this, which were opportunistic, not like the McAvoy hit or the Gallagher hit, which were a little more predatory in nature. So I think the right call with two games for this one.
Yeah, it seems like a reasonable punishment if you're following along. More on the punishments in just a second. But let's talk about the other suspension that is looming. Hasn't been handed down at the time that we're recording this. Remember Tom Wilson? Haven't really heard much about him for the last 3 years, because that was the last time he was suspended. So Wilson has a little kerfuffle going on in the Caps Maple Leafs game with Noah Gregor. There's a bit of a check and a try to avoid the check. And then, of course, the stick comes up and Wilson's stick gets Gregor in the face. Okay, there's a penalty that's given, and understandably so. There was also a hearing. And in fact, it was an in-person hearing that was offered to Tom Wilson. I sent you a text afterwards. I said, I cannot believe that he's getting an in-person hearing for this.
I was equally surprised. I figured this was suspension worthy, right? It's a flagrant high stick. It's a one-handed whipping it across the face. You're looking at a suspension, especially for a guy for like Tom Wilson, who's been in this boat before. He's had his share of disciplinary history. He's gone almost we're on the just the 3-year anniversary of his last suspension.
Right.
So he seemed to clean things up. But yeah, there's no excuse for this one. This wasn't a play on the puck. This wasn't an attempted stick check. So I'm good with the suspension. But yeah, Todd, I did not see it being an in-person hearing. I did not think we would be looking at 5+.
No. So well, and I don't think we're getting +5. I think we're getting 5. It's going to be the same as Morgan Riley got for his cross check, because you can't appeal to an independent body. You can only appeal to the commissioner at 5. And I think that's where this one goes. But if I'm not mistaken, Wilson is not considered a repeat offender because it's been so long between suspensions. He does have a history, but he's not a repeat offender. Am I getting that right?
Todd, I am glad you brought that up because you have, and both points are relevant. Repeat offender designation is important because it dictates how he loses salary. Nothing else. Repeat offenders, that 18-month window where a player who has prior disciplinary action is marked as a repeat offender by player safety. If you're not a repeat offender, which Wilson will not be in this case, you lose your salary based on your suspension divided by the number of days in the NHL season. Once you become a repeat offender, your salary loss is based on the number of games in the National Hockey League season. It's about double, so you're almost losing twice as much salary when you're marked as a repeat offender. But that's how it's calculated. That's how it's computed under the CBA. And that's all that repeat offender means. The NHL's Department of Player Safety will, of course, look at the last 18 months, but they will look at Tom's entire disciplinary history, all of his fines, his 30+ games worth of suspensions that he's had over the years, some plays that they've reviewed that haven't resulted in a suspension or haven't resulted in a fine that were still on their radar for being dangerous, reckless, negligent, those types of things. So, yes, Tom Wilson is not a repeat offender, but Tom Wilson's history is absolutely a factor in determining the length of this suspension. And that's player safety's attack, right? They first look at the act and they say, is this a suspendable offense? Which clearly it is. Then they look, is there an injury on the play? And what is this player's history? And now let's figure out how long the suspension is going to be, which they did some number crunching and arrived at least 5.
Well, and I think that's going to be interesting. I'm putting it at 5. Do you have a guess at the over under?
Well, I'm going to go with you on 5. I think I wasn't thinking it would be 5 to begin with. Obviously, you're sending a message to a guy here. You want to send a message to other players. But I thought you brought up the great point, Todd, of why it would only be 5.
Yeah.
Because the appeals process is limited just to Commissioner Gary Bettman. If you go above that, you start to get into independent arbitrator territory. You can appeal it. It goes outside. It drags on. If it's 5 games, it goes to the commish. And the commish doesn't often go against Paros.
Exactly. So we'll wait and see what the verdict is there. The other thing that came out of the general manager's meetings was the discussions with George Paros. And they said there was a lot of conversation and they wanted to have greater dialogue and understanding. And afterwards, many of the general managers said, I understand the process a lot better now that it's been explained to me and there's been a lot of clarity and reasoning and rationale giving. So in addition to doing it for the general managers, how about Department of Player Safety? You do that for your fans as well.
Good stuff, man. Where to work?
Get in the box. It's the Scouting the Refs podcast. Read more at scoutingtherefs.com. Follow Scouting the Refs on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Email the show at heyref@scoutingtherefs.com.
They're good, my book.
Subscribe, share, and keep those sticks down.
That's good play.